Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Second Chance Podcast. I'm your host, Raphael Rowe. Gary Mansfield, the Artful Dodger from episode 18 on this week's retake, agreed to transport what he thought was fake designer clothes labels, which actually turned out to be 4.2 million worth of Class A drugs. He received a 14-year sentence in prison and behind bars found solace through art. Gary shares with us his cathartic experience in surviving prison's challenges and his determination to change his life, making artwork and being the vessel for others to think differently.
And when I've got in the dock and they've said to me is, I've explained that this guy Sid, and Sid wasn't his real name by the way, but I've explained that this guy Sid had got me involved. He said he's Sid in this courtroom now. And I've looked over at the other guys who are on trial. I've looked over at this Sid and he's put his head down. And I went, no. It was at that point I knew that I was going to jail. And he'd put his head down. I said, no, he's not here. And he looked straight up at his family and gave a little fist pump and went, yes. And I just...
Why did you feel the need to protect him?
Because I couldn't stand it. I've been a criminal all my life. And to be honest, it sounds pathetic, but I loved that life. I loved the romance about it, you know, all the films and the books. I wanted to be a part of that. And as pathetic as it sounds, I was a part of that, you know, and I felt I was. I was knocking about.
But at that moment, you knew, Gary, that you would end up getting a very long sentence because this was a serious crime and you had a way out, but you didn't want to be labelled a grass or you didn't want to.
Yeah, well, pretty much it wasn't the thing to do. And the way I figured it, I lived by these rules. So then I fall by the rules because that was that so-called criminal code, which I later found out is a complete load of bollocks. You know, when you get to it all, you know, no one believes in that. That the worst ones are the ones at the top. You know, they're at the top for a reason because they're sort of, you know, getting rid of everyone below them. And I just couldn't stand up. I had a good reputation. You know, I had a good name. I didn't want people to sort of, even if these big London gangsters were saying it's all right, it wasn't all right in my heart because that's the rules I lived by. I thought, you're right, this is going to get me out of jail. It'll save me a few years in jail. But I knew that in my heart, I'd be carrying that around with me for the rest of my life. You know, and I couldn't do that.
It's such an important point because I think, you know, for those who are not caught up in that criminal fraternity or environment, the real criminal fraternity, I'm not talking about gangsters, I just mean crime in general and the loyalty that you think you have to your comrades in crime or co-defendants, etc. And all these people that kind of read about it or see it, and they think it's such an admirable thing. And you've just hit the nail on the head by saying it doesn't really exist. You know, those at the top are at the top because they are the biggest grasses of them all, or some way. So it's important that you delivered that message to people that they mustn't believe that myth. And although you have your own morals and values and couldn't bring yourself to do it, when you later learned that actually the existence of it means that you suffer and no one else suffers, but actually they would have turned around and made you suffer when you wouldn't have made them suffer, blah, blah, blah. So I think it's an important point that you make there, Gary, that people need to understand that this world of criminality, although on the surface and in movies it looks quite romantic and it's all about loyalty and I wouldn't, the reality is the majority do turn each other over and they will grasp as quickly as they possibly can to save their own skin. You were found guilty and sentenced to 14 years?
Yeah, I was expecting 18 because it was, you know, it was £4.2 million. It wasn't, you know, you can't pass that off as a bit of personal, you know. And I expected 18. Other people had got sort of 20s and that I'd heard of, you know, 18, 20. I knew on the ladder of the five of us that were there, I was second from bottom. Or I was either second or third from bottom with me and the other guy who brought it over from Holland. So I thought I'd get about 18. I got 14 and I was prepared for doing 9. So in my head, I'd already, oh, I know it sounds a bit strange, but in my head, I'd already done 2 years because I was expecting to get out when I was 33. And now the judge gave me 14, which meant I'd done 7. Now I'm getting out when I'm 31. And I was, as I say, I was mentally prepared for it. So I've already done 2 years on that day, you know.
What did the others get?
3 got not guilty. And the guy who brought it over, he got found guilty. He got 15.
So just the two of you got sentenced. You,
yeah,
who didn't even really get very far because you put it into the back of the car, didn't even get in the car and were nicked and ended up getting 14 years. Let that be a lesson to anybody who wants to get caught up in the world of drug trafficking. 14 years, went to prison here in the UK. Even though your mind was prepared for the length of time that you were willing to do, you kind of accept, you went not guilty, got found guilty. Once you were found guilty, you accepted responsibility, did you? And just knuckled down and got on with your sentence.
Yeah, well, I mean, all I could do was, I mean, I had for a few years, I was just thinking about what I was going to do to the ones who got me into this. And it was screwing me. Like every single night, I was thinking, I'm going to go out. When I get out, I'm going to find them. Or I'm going to go and get them, take them away. I knew where I was going to bury them. You know, all of that sort of crazy, crazy stuff that I had going on. Every single, not some nights, every single night, I was getting it in my head. I'm going to take them away. I'm going to do this to them, do that to them, finish them off, where I'm going to bury them. And I had everything planned. And it was screwing me over, screwing. And I told one of my friends one day, and he just went, "You've got to get that out of your mind, mate." He said, "This is going to be a hard sentence if you're going to take that attitude every single night, like torture yourself every night." And that was the best bit of advice because I did stop doing that. I wanted to get out of crime, and I was looking at the people around me. And when I was hearing people saying things, you know, like when people are going, like using little phrases, "Oh, he's one of your own," and all these little bits and pieces where I was hearing people speak and I thought, I don't want to sound like that. I don't want to be that. They sound like fucking idiots. I don't want to be that anymore, you know. And then I just started looking at my life, what it could have been. You know, my brother, we grew up on the same estate, obviously, you know, me and my brother. My brother's as straight as a die. So something went wrong. You know, we both had the same upbringing. We both had the same, we both went without as kids, you know. We had exactly the same upbringing, yet I went in one direction, he went in the other. So it was something to do with me. I can't blame it all on, you know, coming from a one-parent family, you know, on a poor council estate. That isn't good enough.
Well, I understand that, and I suppose lots of other people understand that because often people use that as an excuse, don't they? I myself grew up in a council estate and nearly everybody around me led a law-abiding life. my life went in a completely different direction, and I was partly to blame for some of that. Where did you go to do your 14 years? And when I say where did you go, I mean when somebody gets 14 years for attempted distribution or what, trafficking of heroin, you know, I don't suppose they go to an open prison. Where did you go to, and what was it like in prison for you with that kind of sentence over your head?
Well, I went into Chelmsford first on remand. So there was a year in Chelmsford on remand. Then I went to Swellside, which I was there, which is a Category B, high security on the Isle of Sheppey in Kent. Not a nice place.
I remember it well. It's not the nicest of places, is it? It's got quite a bad reputation. A lot of very hardcore prisoners there.
Raphael, I had a fight within 5 minutes of being on the wing. I was having a fight with two guys who wanted some tobacco off me. I said no, they come back. I said no, they come back again. I told them to fuck off. They come back again, tooled up, wanting to have a... Within 5 minutes, I'm fighting with...
And that's the reality, yeah. Isn't it? That's the real reality of prison.
With a couple of
Did you win?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I had a little hole in my side, but it wasn't a big one. You know, it was the guy stabbed me with a pencil or something small. It only went in a little bit. It was just a little small wound, but... They was out the cell, they was gone, they didn't mess me about anymore and just sort of carried on from there. But yeah, literally within 5 minutes.
And was Swellside where you first picked up this ability or this insight into art? Or did you leave Swellside, come back, or was it in another prison that you discovered that art was something that could change your life?
Yeah, it was in Swellside. That's where I wanted to sort of try and change. I went on to the art class, as I say, fell in love with art. And it's something, it's a world away from anything I'd ever done before, you know.
And how do you manage that? How do you manage surviving? You've already talked about two people coming at you within minutes of being inside that particular prison because of its volatility. How do you navigate trying to keep yourself safe from attack or people who want to take things from you? And focus on, you know, educating yourself or changing your life, because there's always going to be a challenge in prison. You know, even when you don't want it, it will come at you, and that can end up disrupting who you are and what you're trying to do. And the authorities don't see that. They often just see the negative side of it. Even if you stand there all day and get blue in the face trying to explain, hey, it wasn't your fault, you've been trying to do the right thing. But when two people come at you trying to take something, you've got to defend yourself. Otherwise, you'll be vulnerable throughout the rest of your sentence. So how did you manage that, Gary?
Well, luckily, when I got there, I had my friends outside, new people in there. So I had not a welcoming party, that's a bit of an exaggeration. But there was people there who approached me and said, oh, I'm friends of so-and-so. They said you was coming. You know, here's a few bits and pieces. So I knew people there anyway. I knew people there that I'd known from the outside. I knew people there from Chelmsford Prison as well. And because the guys who were friends of friends there had a big reputation in the jail, I sort of went in under their umbrella, if you like, you know. And if you're sort of quite aggressive in your approach, you know, aggressive by nature, or firm, if you like to call it that, that's sort of because you're in that closed environment, your personality sort of comes out and can be seen, you know. So if people think you're a bit of a hard nut, you sort of get left alone or confronted, you know. And I didn't get confronted too much, and I'm not a bad bloke either, you know. I'm always sort of laughing and joking, and I've always got on well with people, you know. I've never been a sort of a bully or a racist or anything like that, you know. So I've got nothing there. And I've worked a lot with travellers as well. And there's quite a few travellers there that were friends of friends or probably related to friends, you know.
So that's how you coped and survived. But how would you describe prison for those, you know, when you went in as an 18-year-old or as a teenager or got in trouble with the law, some of your friends saw it as a bit of kudos. And we know those stories, don't we? We know that cliche where people start saying, oh, you've been to prison, you must be tough, et cetera, et cetera. But for those people who hesitate and wonder what it's really like in prison, and only those who have the lived experience that you and I do, how would you deliver that message to people who are trying to tell people that prison is not a nice place? And I'm not sort of saying, you know, oh, it's just violent, you know, but I'm talking about your insight, Gary. How would you describe prison, the reality of prison and the psychological challenges that you have to overcome, even as a guilty man?
Well, it is a bit of a sort of a roller coaster, as you're well aware. There is the camaraderie. You know, there are plus sides. There's no denying it. Well, it changed my life, as it did yours. You know, would we both be doing what we're doing if it wasn't for jail? So there can be positives come out of it if you're positive. If you go in and you're negative and you just want to carry on as you were, you're just going to come out as you were. You know, you've got to sort of sow your own seed, if you like, you know. But, yeah, there's camaraderie in there with your friends, if you choose the right friends, you know. It can be a good, positive place. But on the whole, man, the people who get nicked are criminals, and they're all in one space. And yes, a lot of the guys are nice. It is a reflection of society, but condensed. And there is some horrible, nasty people. Not all of them on the surface. You know, some of them could be quite respectable, quite normal people, but it's not a nice environment to be in. It's very negative. I ruined my family for several years, which had an impact on me to this day. The thing of being cheated, like being so gripped onto these rules that I was following as a criminal, and then realizing that it was all a waste of time. And that is how I sum up prison, is just a waste of time. I could have been a litter picker in, you know, McDonald's, going around picking up rubbish off the street, and I would have earned more than I ever did as a criminal, you know, in them 7 years.
From the young boy who used to romanticise about the world of crime to now having the kids he wished he had been growing up, the Artful Dodger has indeed broken the chain and put his own stamp of a positive spin on his time in prison. Retake 6 is a clip from episode 18 with Gary Mansfield. You can listen to the complete episode on whatever platform you download or listen to podcast. Please share this podcast with your friends, family and colleagues, and follow the show for updates about new episodes by just clicking on subscribe. You can also be a part of this podcast by rating and reviewing what you've heard and tell us what you think. More importantly, tell others what you think by leaving some comments and feedback. If you'd like to purchase a copy of my book, Notorious, go to www.raphael-rowe.com. Thanks for listening to Second Chance Podcast. Audio editing is by Audio Avalanche. The original music is by J Road Productions. The cover design work is by Studio Minerva. Social media creator is Sophie Warner. This episode was produced by Kim Collicutt and me, your host, Raphael Rowe.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.